You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
And welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto, and I am ever so glad you're joining us this fine day. We got somebody new sitting across the glass from me, so I'm kind of anxious. I got to tell you the truth. We've been doing this show like 3 years now, and I think this is the first time Art Factoria hasn't been sitting back there. So, Wayne Bishop, welcome to the show. Dwayne Bishop.
Oh, you said Wayne. I didn't even catch that.
But yeah, Dwayne Bishop.
Yes, Dwayne Bishop, hey.
Yeah, well, welcome to the show, Dwayne.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So you're my new sidekick.
Yes, I will be the Robin to your Batman or the Aqualad to your Aquaman.
Okay.
If you like, I don't know.
Are you anxious?
A little, but hey, you know, it's always fun. I like nerves.
Okay.
Makes me feel good.
So where are you from, Vancouver?
No, originally I was born and raised over in Toronto.
Oh.
Yep. I try to pronounce the T's now because since I moved out here, I realize we only say Tirana.
Tirana.
Yeah, I'm from Tirana.
Yeah. Okay. Whereabouts in Toronto? Are you a Mississauga boy?
Nope. I grew up, I guess, for the people that do know around there, Young and Shepherd. It's like North York area. And then, I spent the rest of my days in... right in the thick of the downtown area.
So where did you get your radio schooling? This is kind of a post entrance interview now.
Yep. I like that. Well, actually, I went to school for music production over at Trebus Institute.
Okay.
So that place gives you a little bit of everything over there, and I kind of just fell into radio. And
so you're a bit of a musician.
Since. Yeah, just a bit. Yeah.
Oh, okay, because Art was, but Art would never play anything. I think Filipinos think that music is all about karaoke. I think that's their idea of being musical. But I'm sensing with the dreads that you're bearing that you're a little more hands-on.
A little bit, yep.
So what do you play?
First and foremost, I'm a drummer.
Okay.
Yep. That's my main thing.
Good.
So, you know, they always have that joke, what do you call a guy that hangs around a bunch of musicians?
The drummer?
The drummer, yes.
Oh! Yeah. Buddy Rich would kick your ass if you said that.
I know, right?
Well, good stuff. So, do you play in any bands? Because we would always be promoing Art's comedy gigs.
Ah, right.
So you get to do the same thing. Are you in a band?
No, I haven't been in a band for quite some time now, actually.
Oh, yeah. Too busy.
Yeah,
we should form a band.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, can you? I think so. Did you see that there was a viral video going around from the Jimmy Fallon show of him singing with Billy Joel? Have you seen this thing?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, you got to see this viral video. It is awesome. So Fallon pulls this. It's called Looper, I think, is the name of the app, and it's on the iPad. And they sang "The Lion Sleeps Tonight," and they formed the whole doo-wop band, just the two voices, and it's pretty stunning. You
awesome.
Guys look it up on Facebook. It's one of those viral videos that's going through everything. It's pretty cool. So good. So well when you now we just got to find. Well, we got Hathaway. Hathaway is a good guitar player, so you don't know him yet, but he'll be here on App Wednesday or App Thursday.
Excellent.
So we got Hathaway, and we got the beginning of a real band. That's awesome.
All right, I like it.
That's awesome.
I'm always down.
Okay, well, this is good because I was trying to figure out a way to make the DottoTech group bond more effectively. And I was thinking a dodgeball team, but I think a band would be more fun.
Yeah, that's cool. It's very it's a lot of synergy going on with the music.
There could be. So now, before we go on to let me talk about who's going to be on the show, and then I got a few more questions for you.
Excellent.
Coming up in just a few minutes, we got Jillian Shaw from the Vancouver Sun. Now, Jillian has been doing a series of stories about local companies, and one of the local companies she's writing about is doing something called data mining. They're actually in Victoria, BC, and they're doing a data mining, which in and of itself sounds kind of benign, but it's a terrifying technology as far as privacy is concerned. So you're going to want to stick around and listen to Jillian.
Indeed.
And then John Beeler and I went to Samsung yesterday, and we saw the brand new Samsung Galaxy S5 phone, which is Samsung's new flagship. So we're going to have a chat about that and about Samsung's lineup. So we've got some great stories coming up. Now, I recall we had a brief conversation last week on Art's last show, Dwayne,
yep.
where I asked you what phone you had, and you said, and I don't remember what phone is it that you have again?
Yep. I believe it's an HTC. I believe it's an Amaze.
Amaze. Yes. Is it classified as a smartphone, or is it classified as a special needs phone?
In my case, special needs.
Can you browse the web on it?
Yes.
You can?
Yes, indeed.
Can you text on it?
I can text. I can browse.
Can you take pictures with
it? Yep. Videos even. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what's the operating system? Is it an Android phone?
Yes.
It's not a Windows phone.
Yeah.
It's an Android phone. Okay. Because the jury is out of whether or not we're going to let you participate in the flagship show of each month, which is our App Thursday. Do you use a lot of apps?
When I first got my phone, I did a lot. And now I've actually kind of, I guess, truncated. I've lessened my usage on the phone.
Okay, so what's your favorite app that you use like the most?
My favorite app now, I guess, would just have to be like a weather app. That's about it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's not like where you can find clean water in Vancouver or something like that.
Oh, no, no, that'd be a good one.
Or a bathroom, which has the cleanest bathrooms.
When it comes to bathrooms, I like to be surprised.
You know, I never thought I'd say this, but I'm starting to miss art.
Oh no!
You know, just a little bit, not a lot. Just a little bit, as far as that goes. Okay, so now the next question is we know your phone. Are you a Mac or a Windows guy as far as computers? You're a Windows guy. Right. See, Art was too when he started. Now he's Mac fanboy.
Oh, nice.
So it'll be interesting to see if you manage to maintain your Windows your Windows bent, as it were.
Yep. But, you will definitely be converting me, I guess.
Well, no, I don't have to do that. And it would actually be good if you stood up to me a little bit, because the guy before you never did. So, but it would be good if you did. So that would be awesome. But I think that's enough banter for now. I think that's what we call this little bit of this thing is banter. I think what we should do is we should take a quick break and return, because we've got Jillian Shaw coming up, and she has some really, really interesting and eye-opening stuff to be talking about. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joining me online now from her kitchen office is Jillian Shaw, noted columnist and writer for the Vancouver Sun. Her Digital Life column has been, it's a staple for anybody interested in the world of technology. And Jillian, of course, a regular guest on the show. How are you doing, Jillian?
I'm great, Steve. How are you?
Good. Are you getting ready for sailing season?
Getting ready for sailing season. Yeah, have to pull up those apps.
Yeah, yes. You sail with many, many apps. You probably know every dead spot on the BC coast where you have full access to cell service and where you don't.
Oh, I could tell. I think I could tell you better than the wireless company, Steve. And at times I've kind of rowed randomly around in the dinghy searching out a signal. I think other boaters must think I'm a little loony, but.
Well, those of us that know you and care for you, there's no question you're a little loony. We don't even have to wonder. Now, listen, you wrote a story a couple of weeks ago, or about a week ago, I guess, on a Victoria startup company that does data mining, but it does it based on social media, and it is a staggeringly significant technology, isn't it?
It is. You know, we keep, I mean, the whole trend, Steve, is towards open data. So governments are saying, you know, we're going to release more. They can, you know, they can release data on everything from, I mean, if you can check and see who's paid their taxes in Vancouver recently, you can, you know, everything about from transportation systems to other government, lots of government data is going online and going open, which is a good thing. But what happens and what's happening is that people are mining that data. And in this Victoria startup, EcoSec, has done something really interesting. They've taken all the social network data that's publicly out there that people are posting all the time.
So we're talking Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn,
Instagram,
all of that sort of stuff.
And people who are posting with their this is the key point, Steve. People who are posting with geolocation turned on. So, and the thing is, I don't know, check your phone. A lot of people either deliberately or mistakenly post when they're geolocating themselves. So that means if I post, you can pinpoint to you know, whether I'm in my office or whether I'm, you know, at a conference someplace, and you can see where I'm posting from.
And it's called location service on the app, on the iPhone, for example. That technology is called location services. And you can actually go in, a lot of people don't realize, but you can go in and app by app, you can determine whether or not location services are enabled. If in a lot of cases, you want it. For example, for your map service, you know, for getting directions, you have to have it turned on for it to know where you are to give you a map. But for Twitter or for Instagram, you might not want to have it on because then it exactly pinpoints where you are when you make that post.
Well, exactly. And that's the thing. I had one reader say, well, should I just turn off location services totally? And I would say, well, no, I have, if you look at my iPhone, I have location services because for maps, I have it for, you know, a running app, I have it for a skiing app, because obviously, location services can be very useful.
Yeah.
But there, you may not always want to be sharing your whereabouts. I mean, for like even just for a safety or security, if you're going away for 6 weeks and you're going to be touring Europe and somebody can follow your posts and find out, well, you left this house empty and now they know that you're posting from Italy. So if they want to rob your house,
A really good time to.
Yeah, well, exactly.
We should think about, you know, if you think about logically and you kind of take control of your technology, you should understand what the risks, or you should understand when it's appropriate and when it's not. For example, if you use a tool like Foursquare, which is a check-in tool, well, there are benefits to having Foursquare turned on with location services, because when I go into a restaurant, for example, if that restaurant is engaged, they might be sending me a coupon while I'm there. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the rest of the internet knows that I'm in there, not till I check in with Foursquare, but the local restaurant would know. So there's a lot of gray areas where you might have it turned on, but it's when you start posting, it's when you start publishing onto social media that you are really revealing, you know, exactly what your habits are.
Yeah, and what has happened, Steve, which is really interesting with EcoSec, really innovative. This is a bunch of people who are experts in mapping and 2D and 3D and geolocation. So what they were doing is they set out to make a search engine that would help urban planners figure out what people were doing in public spaces. But they stumbled across this very unexpected result because they took social media posts, and then they combined it with open data. And what they found, Steve, is that they could all of a sudden find out everything about an area. So one of the first ways the founder discovered this, he decided to just do a little geofence, which is take a look at the Esquimalt Canadian Forces base near Victoria. And all of a sudden sprung up all kinds of posts. He could tell what people are doing, what people are saying. And then he went out and looked at something like the oil sands, and he could all of a sudden find, you know, somebody was posting a picture of themselves with a big bag of weed, and then 5 minutes later they were hanging on the top of a smokestack. And
so what
things that perhaps companies wouldn't want to see published.
So because let's kind of walk through what you're describing is happening here. So you are zooming in on a map. So these people are taking a map, they're zooming in, and there are little data points on the map, which if they click on them, they are bringing back these results, these public posts that are happening from within that map. So if I'm in the military base in Esquimalt, and I'm posting and I'm tweeting out about it, it'll show up as a data point there, and then they click on it, and just by looking at the physical location of where it came from, they can then track it back to me, discover my Twitter address, and from there they can continue to dive deeper and deeper into my history, correct?
Exactly. And, you know, the thing is, none of this, all this stuff is available. All this information was out there. But I'll have to tell you, Steve, I did it just for when I was playing around with the software. I decided, well, I think I'll just do a little geofence around the Vancouver airport and see what people are saying from there. A tweet popped out several tweets that clearly were from kids on their March break. And I just randomly pulled one up. And within 2 minutes, Steve, I could tell you who the person was. I knew the name of the kid who was posting. I knew where she lived, right down to the house address. I could pick it out of two houses, and I could see the houses on a Google Street View. I knew where she babysat, and I actually could figure out the house because in Google Street View, the one of two houses had a lot of toys outside. I knew what school she went to, and I knew what she was in high school. I knew probably what grade school she went to because I had all this other information, and I knew where she spent her March break.
Wow. So and now we should.
That's really scary.
But this software is not publicly available at this point. It's beta software that they're working on that they're going to be releasing as a product in some way, right?
Well, it is they sort of have an example as a public available to the public, and what it is, they're tapping into close to 500 feeds, so that could be anything, Steve, from a public webcam. And mm-hmm. amazing when you start looking up how many public webcams, public feeds there are for webcams. It could be anything from a Twitter post to a webcam to your tax rule. Anything that is open data is fair game for this search engine. Close to 500 feeds. But the one that they have available for the public just has, I think, two or three.
Okay.
But interesting, Steve, they even include, because you know I'm a boater, there's information. You can track people to where their boats are. That's how they track ships. And there's even a section so you can see what I can tell you the name of every boat in English Bay that has this AI system and all information about that. So it just gives you an idea that, and how would you know that, right? I mean, it is public information, but it's not so easily available in one spot.
And any one silo of information is interesting. As soon as you start getting 200, 300, 500 silos, you've got a profile. You've got some powerful, powerful information at your fingertips at that point.
Well, that's it exactly. And just interestingly, it was a couple of weeks ago, CanSec West had their big security conference in Vancouver. And there was a very eminent French cyber warfare specialist who was scheduled to present a talk. And the title of it was Hacking 911. And he withdrew Eric Filliot withdrew his talk from the conference, and he withdrew it because he said if he went and told everybody at the conference, told all these security experts what their research was uncovering about data mining, it could actually be the blueprint for an attack on a country. And he didn't want to do that.
And so you had to get some shivers up your spine as you looked at this technology and recognized just how powerful it could and how devastating it could end up being.
It could be, because I think it's exactly as you say, Steve, that in and of itself, like one database or one bit of information is not significant, but it's when it's all combined. And what this French expert said is that they just data mine. And then they apply mathematical algorithms until they and can come up with amazing amounts of information that would never be you could never realize just from, you know, reading this public document or getting this bit of open data.
From everything from blackmail to identity theft to kidnapping
to
terrorism. Sure, yeah. it could be used in all those areas. But of course, I'm pretty sure that our friends over at EcoSec are not nefarious in building their technology with an idea that it's going to be black hat. So what is the positive? What do they see as their business goal of their technology?
Well, you'd have to talk to EcoSec, but from my conversations with them and the founder, their idea is that this could be very useful to governments, to companies. If somebody, say, you're running a big company and you have employees posting, and we hear about this all the time, right? Employees posting, you know, some pretty outrageous things about what they're doing at work. And if you're running a big company, and that could be disastrous, either PR-wise, it could be safety violations, whatever. Well, you might want to know about that before you find it spread out, you know, through social media and everybody else is talking about it and you don't know. Mm-hmm. So you could just do a geofence around your company or your work site, and
you'd be able to just be able to dive in and see who's tweeting.
And be able to dive in and see what's being said. Of course, until everybody gets smart and turns off their location services.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I'm not very comfortable with this. I'm feeling a little uneasy right now. I'm squirming on my ball chair. Well, this is a fascinating, you know, a fascinating snapshot. It's interesting that it's come out of Victoria, and if they're doing it, I can guarantee you they're not the only ones that are trying to figure this out and working on this technology. They will be recreated 10 or 20 times across the world of different companies looking at the exact same sort of data mining.
Oh, so, yeah, both white hat and black hat.
Absolutely.
I mean, as you say, it's not technology that is new. It's just the application of the technology, and it's just the data is all out there. It's the mining of the data, but there are, in at least in Canada, we have protection through our privacy laws.
Some
protection, but as Elizabeth Denham, our privacy commissioner, points out, the fact that we give the okay to have our information released to a company doesn't give that company carte blanche to pass it on or give it to other, you know, use it in any way. And I think that, and of course, so if it's a black hat hacker, they don't care whether you've given permission or not. But if you're a legit company, they do have to respect the privacy laws. So, you know, you have to be sure. If I've told Twitter, yes, it's okay, you can geolocate my posts, well, I'm not actually telling another company that, or am I? See, that's the privacy question. Am I then telling the shoe store that when I walk by that they can, you know, they can try to sell me a pair of shoes? Or am I giving somebody who wants to track my whereabouts, am I giving permission for my whereabouts to be mapped on a Google map?
Are we going to see a lawsuit at some point where some company is going to be sued for using this information inappropriately? I mean, that has to happen, I think, for us to start to
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure that Elizabeth Denham's office and the Privacy Commissioner of Canada, I mean, remember when Google Street View started? They did a whole study into that. But interestingly, there was a newspaper in the U.S., the Journal, did an experiment exactly like this. They took all the public information about gun owners, which all publicly available, but the difference is they mapped it onto a Google map and they published that. And so then you could look in your town and say, it was Vancouver, of course, we have gun laws, so go across the border, look in your town, and you could see, oh, my neighbor has two guns and the guy over the back alley has this kind of a gun. But the backlash from that was very strong.
Sure.
People were very upset at seeing the information visualized in that way, and the Journal took a lot of flack for that. So even though the information is out there, doesn't mean people are ready to see it used in ways that it potentially could be used.
Yes. I'm speaking with Jillian Shaw of the Vancouver Sun. We're talking, of course, privacy, and we're talking about this whole thing started with a Victoria-based company, EcoSec, which is aggregating information based on geotagged information to drive into everything, to drill down at everything from your Twitter feed to your Facebook content, but doing it based on where you're making the post, and it's staggering the amount of information that's able to be gathered. So I guess the lesson for us, you know, let's try and give the audience a little bit of hope. First, learn about the location services on whichever breed of smartphone you carry, and then make prudent decisions on what you are sharing and where you are sharing it. Number one, is that good advice?
That's exactly. And you know, the thing to add to that, Steve, is that it's kind of an ongoing process, because a lot of times with different devices or different software or different social media networks, every time there's an update, some of them will just default to the more open privacy settings.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an ongoing. You always have to be kind of checking your phone that you'll, under your privacy and your geolocation, it will list all the apps like Facebook, Google Maps, and you can turn them on or you can turn them off. But it's a good idea to sort of keep track of them, not just do it once and think it's done for all time.
And educate yourself on the issues. Read Jillian's column. I'll be posting it, this one on EcoSec, which should send a few chills up and down your spine. But also pay attention to what's happening with our privacy commissioner and how the privacy laws in Canada are evolving, because we have to have a voice in it as we move ahead. There's far too few people who actually understand the issues. And the more that do, I think the better we'll be equipped to deal with things as we move along. I'm getting off the off the podium. But it is. It's it terrifies me when I hear it, because I never even envisioned this particular type of application. And you know, I live in this stuff, so when I'm surprised by it, it's a little shocking.
Yeah, I actually talked to Peter Chow White, who's a professor at SFU, and he is very much in privacy and ethics and social media, and a really geeky guy, Steve, like knows his technology, and he was actually surprised and surprised by taking a look at SFU and saying, oh my God, this
we
is
could
you
do
know.
This, yeah.
We're Absolutely. Revealing all this information.
Well, good on you for writing this piece. And right at the very bottom of your piece, I see that you've got a screenshot showing people how to manage their location services. Jillian, thanks so much. It's always a pleasure having a chat with you.
Good talking to you, Steve.
You can find more of Jillian's stuff at the Vancouver Sun. And, of course, we will link to this story on our site. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or a question for Dotto Tech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me now, Dotto Tech regular John Beeler, who joined me this morning at a Samsung event. Samsung comes through, breezes through town on a regular basis. I can't think of another manufacturer that comes through more often than Samsung does, John.
They're pretty consistent.
Yeah, it's once a quarter.
It's great. I mean, they bring all their toys and we get to play with them.
They are a machine as far as producing new gear. They are probably the highest turnover rate of any of the high-tech companies as far as bringing out new models on an ongoing basis. They've always got something to show. And I guess this is the big time of year for them, because this is when they're going to be showing us their new flagship handheld phone for the coming year. And the Galaxy S5 was the star of the show today. What did you think of it?
You know, I really liked it. It's a very nice to hold in your hand. Lots of new features that actually are useful. And again, just a beautiful screen, which Samsung is kind of known for. And I do like the fact that they addressed the fact that something I've complained about for forever with the Samsung devices, and that their oversaturated displays are just a little too much. They look too good all the time. And these ones are a little bit more natural looking. And
you're just such a piece of work. So the picture is too good. That's a Beelerism, really.
No, I'm not alone in my thinking. I mean, a lot of people take great photos with their smartphones, and there's nothing more disappointing to take a great photo, and then you go and look at it on your computer, and it's like, well, it doesn't look as good as it does on my phone, you know? And that's because these displays are almost too good, and they really kind of artificially pump up the quality of the photograph. And then when you go look at it on anything, even on another Samsung device, it's different.
It doesn't stand up. And let's talk about that screen to start, because it is the centerpiece of the phone. It's a 5.1-inch Super AMOLED display, and it's bigger than the S3 before that went before, to the S4, I guess, that went before. It's a huge screen.
It's creeping towards phablet territory. Yeah. I mean, it's very close in size to my Note 3. But the funny thing is, it still feels light and solid at the same time. Like, it doesn't feel like a big tablet-y type thing. And I guess that's kind of what Samsung's been doing with the rest of their tablet line, too, is they have these giant displays that weigh next to nothing. Mm-hmm. And yet they still feel like they're, you know, solid, and they're not going to just, like, you know, break in half.
Yeah, so it's going to be shipping on April the 11th, I think. So we're only a week and a half away or so
from
this being available with the carriers. And of course, if we're going to talk to Beeler, we better start talking with a camera.
That's right.
And it's 16 megapixel camera.
Yeah, it's got one of the biggest, I guess, sort of camera sensors on the back of the display. You could actually see how much, you know, space it takes up, and it's a big camera.
Well, 16 megapixels is really pretty much in range with what the top end DSLRs have today, is it not?
I would say it's more like the consumer range. The consumer range, yeah. The higher end SLRs are in the 20 plus.
Oh my goodness.
24 megapixels, but I mean, they also have a much bigger sensor. So, and that's always been sort of the problem with the megapixel game on a smartphone. You're still dealing with an incredibly tiny sensor.
Yeah.
And a very tiny lens that doesn't have enough distance between the sensor and the actual lens itself. So, but I mean, I took it for a spin this afternoon. I got my review device and I went out and shot some cherry blossoms, which is what you do in Vancouver now.
Let me point this out. You got our review unit, which I was kind of, because Samsung didn't have enough for us all to have one, so they made us share, and I said, John can have it.
Well, there you go.
So that's pretty nice of me. You owe me, Bill.
I do owe you. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, but then I said, if you're gonna take it, you're gonna have to talk about it and help me out on the show. So that's great. So yeah, I can see the picture of the cherry blossom, and I'll put a link to this on our website. Pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, you really get a lot of detail and definition. And I was shooting into the sun, and I still got a very well-defined cherry blossom with some nice, you know, blurring of the background of the other blossoms behind it. And I also did a panoramic from the media briefing suite at the Fairmont.
Yeah, I see.
And it's just like the colors look great. And yeah.
It was
just
a beautiful day too. I mean, that
it was
helped.
A perfect day. Yeah.
Now, did you use HDR for either of those photos?
I did not.
Okay.
I was just using the auto settings. I like to sort of get a feel for how people are actually going to use their smartphone. Uh-huh. And most people would just use the auto settings. HDR is a bit overblown, in my opinion. But, you know, I'm still going to experiment with this phone for a little while and sort of see what the differences are. I know on the iPhone, which has an HDR function as well, it doesn't really behave like a traditional HDR function on the iPhone. It just sort of pumps up certain things. And I don't really notice enough of a difference.
I wonder what percentage of photos are taken in full auto mode.
I would think probably in the 80-90%.
Yeah,
it's probably only the camera nerds like me that might even bother switching it.
Now, talking about the auto mode, they trumpeted quite highly a dramatic speed increase in autofocus. And I didn't realize that my iPhone, for example, took over a second to focus.
And well, it really does depend on what you're shooting and mm-hmm. how well lit it is. But basically, the autofocus on this is ridiculously fast.
They say 0.3 of a second.
Yeah. And I mean, even with my iPhone 5S, which arguably has the best camera that Apple's ever made in their smartphone, there's still sometimes a delay, but it really depends on what you're shooting. If I was shooting, you know, something outside like the cherry blossom in full sun, it might not, you know, might be the same amount of time for both cameras, but it really depends. But even panning around in the hotel room that we had the media briefing in today, which was kind of dark. I mean, it was overblown by the exterior lights coming through the windows, exterior sun, and you know, it was quickly focusing, and I could easily just sort of tap to focus and get that really nice blurred background with a sharp, crisp foreground image.
Mm-hmm. So the camera is obviously a step up. Now they've, and I think they're not alone, but curiously, it's only the rear-facing camera that's gotten the massive upgrade. The forward-facing camera is still just a 2-megapixel camera and is still a pretty much a poor cousin. So for all the people that want to take easier selfies, it's not going to get any better on the selfie front, unfortunately. I can't figure out why camera manufacturers aren't spending a little more time on that.
Well, and you would, I think we're pretty much in agreement on this. They could easily even offer a flash that's forward-facing as well. I mean, a lot of people take really horrible selfie photos using the front-facing camera in the dark, and they look horrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking about maybe, you know, pennies worth of extra technology to add back into the camera, because they already have everything else. But I don't know. They probably have a reason. And, you know, I think the first company to really come up with a really good front-facing camera is going to be the selfie camera.
Yeah.
So.
And it'll be well. They've got the ones that I think is it a Motorola that has the rotating lens that flips back and forth.
Yeah, and there's some of the Chinese sort of up and coming manufacturers that are making some, you know, lots of different variations just to sort of stand out.
Now so beyond the camera, when the very next thing that they wanted to start talking about on this was S Health. Now that's Samsung Health, which is basically a cluster of different sensors and monitors and tools that are all around the online and e-health marketplace, and Samsung is showing a pretty solid commitment to the entire to their S Health initiative.
Absolutely, I mean they've really been, you know, putting out the application updates for the S Health, making it really easy so that, you know, you don't have to carry a Fitbit. You don't have to carry a fuel band or, you know, what have you. You just carry your phone and it does a lot of that tracking for you automatically.
So right out of the gate, it will do things like tracking your tracking the number of footsteps and the distance that you're traveling and stuff like that. Now, we didn't ask how much of an impact that has on battery life, but it will be not insignificant, I imagine.
Well, it depends. I'm not sure exactly how they're doing it in the Samsung device. I know on the iPhone 5S, they have a dedicated secondary chip just for being a, basically a pedometer that tracks your step movements and things like that. And apparently that makes it, on, at least on the iPhone side, that it's a very minimal battery hit. Mm-hmm. And just in my experience with the S4 and the Note 3, it doesn't seem to really be a big difference as far as...
Now, is that because it's using the motion sensor rather than the GPS?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's the thing is, when you're wearing a wearable measuring device like a Fitbit or a fuel band, you're typically wearing it on something that's actually moving. If it's sitting in your pocket and you're, you know, you have a very low vibrating stride, if you will, it's not going to measure everything as accurately as if it was on your arm or on your leg or, mm-hmm. you know, that type of thing. So okay. There is, you know, it's not 100% perfect, but it's still better than nothing, and it also then becomes a baseline for you to measure other things too.
Now, tied to that, well, actually, let's finish off with the phone, and then we're going to return to the health thing right away, because all of yep. their peripherals that they were talking about were health-related, I think, anyways. But yes. The other big announcement for them is IP67, which is an enhanced protection against environmental conditions.
Yes, and this is huge. I mean, this is really the first non-ruggedized phone that's really kind of ruggedized. And this IP67 rating basically means that it can be immersed in water, in shallow water, for up to 30 minutes and still function. And they only get that certification if it actually does that. So we'll have to wait and see how many people actually try to take selfies underwater with their S5s, but basically you should be able to drop it in a puddle or the toilet even and still be able to have a functioning device and not have to, you know, get a replacement.
And so those accidental dunks, which has been the demise of so many a smartphone, should be could well be a thing of the past. Now, it's interesting how they've done it. They've done a lot of industrial design where the entire unit, all of the guts of the unit are pretty much sealed except for the battery, and then the back case actually kind of has like a gasket that yeah. goes around to add to create that barrier and protection. So it's pretty cool. They've done yeah. a lot of industrial design on it for sure.
Yeah, and it's also dust resistant too, which I know, you know, you get a piece of sand in some of your stuff, it can, you know, get in there and just sort of cause all kinds of problems. And so keeping the water and the dust out is huge, you know.
In a lot of environments where people don't have a case, they don't put it in a ruggedized case, it's in their pocket and they're, you know, a carpenter or something, they're in a dusty environment.
We've seen tons of people with those giant life cases or life proof cases and stuff like that, and it just makes this a really slim and beautiful phone this big bulky clunky thing.
Absolutely, yeah. And as soon as you take it out, it's such a liberating experience getting you forget how sleek and little your phone is. I had one of those. I had one of the Gorilla type cases on my iPhone for the longest time, and it's great for hitting people with, but other than, you know, it's not so great for everything else. So let's move on to the peripherals, because they were showcasing two watches and a fitness device, which really goes head to head with a Fitbit, which are upgrades of their Samsung of their Gear line of watches, and yes. they've really this generation two. I guess this is generation two, but it's significantly improved, at least as far as aesthetics goes, over generation one.
Yeah, I mean, I got to try out the first one quite a lot, and I liked it, but I mean, there was a lot of shortcomings to it, and I think they really probably heard a lot of feedback from people about, you know, what worked and what didn't, and these. The Gear 2 and the Gear 2 Neo is basically sort of like their sleek and sort of more professional version of these watches, whereas the previous one was a little bit more plasticky and a little bit more, you know, good for nerds and not much else.
Yeah.
And, but these ones look like nice, sleek, stylish watches. They have a nice, you know, aesthetic.
I wouldn't go quite that far yet, but they look like a reasonably nice watch. They're not... I'm not sure that the average business guy wearing a nice suit is going to be happy with it on, but it's getting close. It's a lot closer than the first one was, that's for sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they are, you know, I mean, I know that you will feel that you're in the height of fashion wearing one, Mr. Beeler. But we've also, but you know, with the Google Glass, you are hardly concerned about outward aesthetics as you move about the city.
This is true.
Did I just insult you, John?
I think you did.
Okay, I'm sorry about that, but it's true.
I'll keep the fun a little longer then.
There we go. Yeah, I'll see if I get it back. So the Gear 2 and the Neo. The Gear 2 Neo and the Gear 2. So the Neo is a junior version that doesn't do quite the same things. The key thing, I think, in the Neo or the Gear 2 is the fact that it now uses its considerable amount of onboard storage, 4 gigabytes, allowing you to store music or podcasts and then be able to stream them to Bluetooth as you're out walking and doing that sort of stuff. So that is a fairly significant addition.
Well, definitely one of the things that they seem to take note of is that when you're going for a run or going to the gym or something, you don't want to lug your smartphone with you mm-hmm. all the time. And so these devices have really been meant to sort of be standalone devices that can record, you know, your activities and all that kind of stuff, as well as giving you things like Bluetooth audio so you can have music for your workout or your run. And you can completely leave your phone in your locker or back in your house or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. you're doing. And then, you know, sync it up, back up when you...
It'll report back to the phone.
Yeah.
Now, and so they're fairly expensive there. I think it is $399 and $299 is the kind of the price points. They were fairly high priced.
Yeah, I mean, they are definitely high-end devices for sure. And the functionality that they have is still kind of limited, but I mean, they have been there's like a little app store for these devices, and it has been expanding the offerings, you know, as the months have gone on. It's only been, I mean... That's the thing, is we were sort of talking at the top of this about, you know, how Samsung comes around so often. And, you know, the last time they were around is when they had the first generation of these watches. So it's only been about six months. Yeah.
So we haven't even talked about the fact that they do interface with the phone, allowing you to answer calls and receive text messages and stuff, which to me, I find is one of the least exciting parts of them. I find the sensors that are on them as far as the fitness sensors to be far more exciting. And that might be a personal thing, but they've all got heart rate monitors on them, which does allow for a lot of fitness applications.
Well, it's interesting too, because just a basic heart rate monitor itself can cost about half of the cost of some of these devices.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have the fact that it's actually integrated with the internet, and it's a trackable, like it's a much more, you know, useful set of data points for you to track, having it connected to a smartphone than being a dedicated heart rate monitor that you strap around your chest or something like that. You know, and for not much more than the price of a standalone heart rate monitor, you can get a watch that does a little bit more too.
Yeah. Now, the one that I liked the most, though, was the Gear Fit. It's a brand new product for them, and it's a sleek little pellet that I think most people will wear as a watch on the inside of their wrist, just because of the way that it reads and the way that the display works. But that has a very accurate heart rate monitor, as well as the basic fitness, all of the basic fitness things that you would get from a Fitbit or Fuel Band.
Yeah, and you still, the other nice thing about the Fit that you get is you still get your notifications from your smartwatch too, or from your smartphone.
Yeah.
So you will get the text message alerts, the Facebook, Twitter, those types of things that you can configure. But it is a beautiful little display. It's very small and thin. And then it has all those different measuring sensors built in as well. The other thing that's interesting about this, unlike pretty much all of the other health wearables, if you will, that this actually has a removable rubberized sort of band. And that's going to mean that there'll be a plethora of third parties making custom colors and options and, you know, things that you can attach to this. They're calling it, well, the main part of the Fit itself can clip into all kinds of different things because mm-hmm. of the design. So.
Yeah, and so we should see a lot of different things coming out as far as that, probably even a hat in other areas. But it is $199, and the only thing missing from it, it doesn't have the camera, which I don't think is a big deal.
No.
But it doesn't have the ability to store and stream music. It allows you to control your phone's music, but it doesn't allow you to stream it itself. So I think that's what I'm going to... But I think for this to be prime time, it needs that one last piece, and then they've got a pretty impressive product then.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty neat... I mean, when you think of the price point, I mean, it's $199. You know, a Fuel Band's $150, and it's not near as compelling as this. You know, so it's definitely in there. And then, like you said, if they add in that functional functionality with the music, it'll be a home run.
I wonder if this fitness stuff is going to end up being a big differentiator for Samsung as we move ahead. Apple's got some catch up to do in this space.
Well, there's definitely been a lot of people talking about these fitness type wearables, and there's definitely no shortage of competition in these dedicated devices. But I think what it comes down to at the end of the day, most people lug their phone everywhere. I remember when I was looking to buy a wearable, I looked at the Fitbit and the Fuel Band and all those other ones, and everybody I asked, well, which one do you have? They would tell me what they have, but they never wore it because it wasn't integrated into their life, and it was too ugly, or it was too small and they would lose it, that type of thing. Your phone, you're not going to lose. So definitely Samsung has the edge over Apple as far as, integrating all these apps together, making it so you just have to carry your phone. And then now they're giving some additional accessories so you don't have to carry your phone for those certain situations where it's not, appropriate or comfortable to have your phone with you. They're definitely sort of hitting all the right marks with this for sure.
Oh, and I think that this Gear Fit is fine enough looking that nobody will have any issues at all wearing it.
I mean, it's sleek, it's black, and it's got a really, really gorgeous display for considering what it is. I mean, that's one of the things I liked about the Fuel Band is it had a really neat display.
Yes.
But it feels like an Atari compared to this.
Yeah. And it's kind of cartoonish. It's kind of got that that bubblegum type feel or look because of the colors and stuff. No, the Gear Fit looks refined.
Yeah,
and that's the best way that I can put it. It's it's kind of got that pearl glass finish
and
the black,
and it's kind of curved, so it fits really nice around your hand and or your wrist. And definitely it was the neatest thing that we saw today.
Far and away, well, one of the neatest. Yeah, it was the neatest thing. It was the neatest thing that we saw. They had a few other things that they showed us. They were certainly talking about their tablets a little bit, but the phone was the star of the show. So the Galaxy S5. Gear 2, Gear 2 Neo, and Gear Fit are all the kind of the stars of the show today. John's got a great post with, I'm sure he'll be writing up a more detailed review, but he's got photos of them all, which we'll put links to so that people can see what we're talking about. I think Samsung's, they've set the bar pretty high. This isn't just a simple upgrade. They've improved the features on the phone quite a bit, and it's going to be, they're holding serve against Apple, that's for sure.
Yes. Yeah, one thing we didn't talk about the S5, which is a pretty big deal, is the ultra power saving mode.
They were
claiming that with 10% of your battery left, you switch to this special mode, you can get 24 hours of talk and text time. And you can also select certain other features to turn on and turn off.
We should point out 24 hours of standby, receiving text or receiving a call within that. But if you're on a call, you're going to lose the battery fairly quickly. I think.
Yeah.
But it gives you that ability to 8 o'clock at night. You realize you're not going to be home till midnight, and now your phone is nearly dead. You can at least be getting texts and receiving any important phone calls for the rest of the evening.
Yeah, you got to get that one more call in for your ride home or whatever, and
you're there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a cool thing. And basically, it shuts down LTE. It steps down the cellular service, and it shuts off Bluetooth and all other things. And it even reverses the screen. Yeah.
It goes to grayscale, which is crazy. And it actually looks kind of cool.
It looks nice in grayscale. It's got a very nice look. It's very readable. That might be a look that I might like occasionally. At night, if you have your phone beside your bed, that would be the display I would want if a text came in and I wanted to look at it at 3 a.m. when I'm groggy.
Yeah. So. Well, and it's definitely one of the benefits of that type of display. It's very low power and it's very rich and vivid, even in just the grayscale mode.
John Beeler of johnbeeler.com, and a couple of weeks you should concentrate all on Samsung apps for coming up Thursday in a couple of weeks.
I have a couple actually.
Yeah, you got some ideas today, did you?
I had them going into today, but yeah.
Okay. Well, you've got to bring the phone. I got to play with it for a few minutes if you're not going to give it back to me for a full demo.
I will.
Hey John, thanks for your time.
No problem.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joining me online now, not from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan anymore, but your first podcast now from Regina, Saskatchewan. Moving on down.
Yeah, you're moving on south, yeah.
So how was the move, Julian?
It was pretty good, yeah. It always helps when you can have somebody else do the lifting for you, so.
Yeah, now, Did the folks at the Old London Drugs give you a big send-off?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and the new ones here in Regina, too, gave me a big welcome. So one big happy family in Saskatchewan.
So a mini version of what went on here in Vancouver last night with Wynn Powell's big reception as he's stepping down after many, many years at the helm of London Drugs. Pretty much the same for Julian leaving the computer section in Saskatoon.
Well, on a very, very small scale compared to Wynn, yeah.
Yes. Let's in the tech news front, Windows 8, there's lots of changes coming, including is finally the long-awaited return of the start menu.
Yeah, that's the next big change. The guys at Microsoft have a conference every year called Builds, and they just announced some changes to Windows 8.1 to make it a lot easier for people with a keyboard and mouse.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are used to touch screens with Windows 8. They really hammered that hard since they've come out with it, but there's still the majority of users don't have a touch screen on their primary computers.
Which is where Windows has taken tremendous heat on this product on.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yeah, they've brought back a version of the start button in Windows 8.1, making it easier to do things like access the control panel and turn off your computer. But the next big changes are coming out with easier integration towards the start screen. Because you've always had to go out of the desktop mode to go onto the modern interface to see all the tiles if you wanted to go on the Microsoft App Store or to do any of those apps that might be for news, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for your creation, you were really forced into the desktop, and then for your consumption, you went back to the screen. So they're coming out with a few refinements, including pinning apps from the modern interface onto the taskbar on the desktop.
Okay.
So that really makes it easier when you're on the desktop the majority of your time with your keyboard and mouse. They're also changing
Does that mean that people that do use a keyboard and mouse won't go into Metro at all? They can just stay in the desktop?
Pretty much, yeah, because when it goes to the desktop, when it goes from the desktop to one of the modern apps, it will feel a lot more natural and they'll all be in one place.
Okay.
It'll also be a lot easier to get back to the desktop with a quicker little hover over one of the corners. Now, there's a couple of the complaints about the way that the bars come up on the side is that they come up too easily. So if you're in, on the web and you've got your web browser open and you go up to the top left-hand corner to do, close or open up a new website, that little corner is also where you switch between open applications. So you are always opening up a menu that you didn't really want. It was too easy to open. So they've really changed the sensitivity. I was playing around with it on a about-to-be-released update coming out on April the 7th, and it is a lot better. It's much easier to make sure that you're not accidentally hitting that area when you're using your mouse.
Oh, good stuff. So now when do we, what is the rollout schedule? When are people going to be getting these upgrades?
Right away. This one will come out as just a regular Windows update, not on the App Store. And they're coming out, it's already available for testers on the MSDN. But on April the 8th, they'll start the big rollout. And by April the 9th, everybody will have it in their Windows update ready to go.
Okay, and so that for those of us that still kind of like using the keyboard and mouse, Windows 8 should become a whole lot. Well, you know, it might not be easier to use, but it's going to be more traditional. You know,
exactly, kind
of feel a little bit more, because so many of the things that we tried to do on the keyboard and mouse that we've done for the last 15 years weren't working in Windows 8, and that was causing some people sitting right here some intense frustration. What do you mean that keyboard shortcut doesn't work anymore? And all of my Windows friends are saying, no, you just got to learn the new way to do it. No, I don't. I want the old way.
They're even bringing back the little bar at the top, because when you're in a full screen application on the start screen, they're even bringing back a little minimize and close button on the top.
You know, change is not always good. It's sometimes better to just kind of still be the way things were for some things.
Exactly, yeah. Or what I like about this change is that if there's the new way of doing it or the old way, so if you want to get used to the new way, or you're transitioning slowly into a tablet, it'll still give you a good in between.
Well, that's it. I mean, the pursuit of the touchscreen on the tablet, the Metro interface is perfect for the tablet in environment, and there's nothing wrong with it. It works so well, but it hasn't translated well onto the desktop. It's been frustrating to people who do use it, and that's the majority of the users, and Microsoft, rightfully so, has taken a lot of heat for this. They aren't Apple. They can't force everybody to change their mind. They're Microsoft. They've got to kind of work with the crowd. So
you got it. Yeah. No, and if anybody wants to see some more details, there's a video and more detailed explanation on the London Drugs Nerd blog at nerdblog.londondrugs.com. So you can watch a little 3-minute video there and see what all of the changes are about.
I will have a link to that in the show notes. Julian,
sounds good.
Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Steve.
Julian Saunders of London Drugs.
Okay, Dwayne, I think that's all the time we have for the show. Not a bad first run for you. Did you mess up at all and not tell me?
No, I would never tell you.
You would never tell me? Not even after even if I asked you if you messed up, you wouldn't tell me?
Oh, it depends on the mess up, I guess.
Okay. Well, we've had the odd one. You know, Mark, we've had the odd thing. And I don't care. I'm not the sort of guy that gets upset. I get upset if you try and cover it up.
Oh, okay.
I can tell you that.
Okay.
So well, I don't really get upset. I just kind of... Yeah, as close to upset as I get. I'm not really big on the upset meter. Knowing that what you know now about the Samsung Galaxy S4, does not your... What's the name of your phone again?
The HTC Amaze.
How long do you have before your contract's up on that?
Less than a year, I think.
Okay.
By January.
Well, you're going to have to really consider... This Samsung Galaxy S5, it's a pretty awesome phone. It might change your life. It might make you far more appealing to both your sex and the opposite sex. That's the cool thing about a phone like that. Is anybody using it makes us that much cooler. So that is all the time that we have for this week's show. My thanks to all of my guests, to Jillian Shaw, to John Beeler, and of course to Julian Saunders, and to no longer neophyte producer, Dwayne Bishop. Thanks a lot, Dwayne.
Thank you.
I'm Steve Dotto. We'll see you next week right here for more Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.